Oh, Regina Carter and her trusty violin with Eddie Harris's classic Listen Here. It's from her acclaimed 1997 album, Something for Grace, which she dedicated to her mother. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and all hell is breaking loose everywhere at 100 miles an hour, which is why I think we need to kind of step back a little bit today. It's just so overwhelming. Everything is going wrong and crazy, and there seems to be no end to it. Everybody's misbehaving and, quarreling and fighting and pushing ourselves, all of us, to war and mayhem. But in the meantime, I should report what is happening in California. It's really devastating, these wildfires that keep spreading, claiming more land, more homes, and bringing more and more misery. As we speak, the reports are, the official reports are, 17 people they have found dead so far, but there is a long list of people who have been unaccounted for, and that's more than 100 people who have been unaccounted for. So they're looking for those people, and they're hoping that they're all right and that they find a way to report themselves as being alive. Because, as you know, in this kind of a search, they have to go into the fire. I mean, there's no other way to check. And it means literally risking life and limb to conduct this kind of search. So they're hoping that if people got out before their homes just burned to the ground, if people did not yet report themselves as still being alive, there are others looking for them, and the hope is that they somehow find a way to report that they're all right. But when you look at the pictures of these wildfires and the damage they have done, it looks really like something out of a movie, like an apocalypse, that the whole region where these fires have spread, they have just taken over, and they can't be stopped. Because another problem that they're coping with is winds. The winds are picking up, and the fires are beginning anew in places where they weren't before, because the winds have blown embers in those regions, and they now are fully engulfed in flames. A really, really terrible situation. And, it brings to mind, what is it that, how can we cope? We never imagined that these awful, awful things could happen to us. We never imagine it. This kind of damage happens to other people, not to us, and while we are sympathetic when it happens to other people, we never imagine that at some point we could be the ones trying to cope with disasters like this. And we've had our fair share, I would say, in the last several months. And this year has been pretty sad. What has happened, and we got all these reports, and after a while, you just go, okay, what is happening here? Which is kind of why I went a little bit off track yesterday, because it really was in my mind that the aggregation of all of these disasters is it's a message, I think, to us on several levels. You have to kind of see where it applies to you, and you know. But it comes when it comes in bunches like this, with very little time to recuperate, even as a person not affected immediately, but affected in the sense that you're taking note of the misery other people are suffering, and part of you suffers too. You pity the situation that they find themselves in. And of course, we are limited in the ways that we can help. Maybe it's a matter of we're far away, or we don't have the resources, or we just can't take much more of this kind of news where people are suffering. And it kind of brings you down. So which is why I'm hoping that we could take a different tack today. And it is a practical thing to do. We are witnessing tragedy after tragedy, suffering after suffering, as if it could never happen to us. So we should sober up a little bit and imagine that if we were to be in a really terrible situation, would we be able to make it alone? Would we be able to come through it alone? And I don't think many of us will be able to do this alone. We would need some kind of help from somewhere. And we would need the courage to believe in our ability to go a pretty long stretch by ourselves, but perhaps not all the way. And we should think about that. We should think about that. Because we are seeing also a kind of heartlessness. One of the things that we hope our government could do, or one of the things that we ascribe to government, is that it would have the power and ability to bring people through disasters. People are not asking for free money and all of that stuff. They want to know to what degree, if things really got bad, to what degree could you depend on some kind of help, the kind of help everybody would need to come through a bad situation. But we're seeing it is a growing sense of heartlessness. And even to get help, as we saw with Puerto Rico, it's a struggle, it's a fight. And you have to see how a government behaves at a time when you expect it to be there, to help, to be present and accounted for. And I don't know about you, but I don't think that was readily available, that kind of help was readily available in Puerto Rico. I don't think that the people in California will find ready help, except, of course, those who are wealthy in the wine-making areas, who have the resources to take care of themselves all the way. But that does not hold up for most people. They will need help from somewhere. And so I'm encouraging a conversation today about where that help would come from if you had to organize it yourself. Let's say something really disastrous happens. Not just to you, but to a community, a neighborhood, a city, a town. And it is now life and death. You could say, and we get a certain satisfaction, a certain sense of comfort of saying, well, if something really tragic happens, we just have faith that help will come. I'm saying, let's disabuse ourselves of that notion for a minute. And while that is hoped for, it is hoped for that whenever tragedy, real tragedy strikes, help will come somehow. But that is a really, you know, it's an intangible thing. What could you count on for certain in the midst of a tragedy, in the midst of a serious issue that is life-threatening? And we're now going to go to the lighter side of this, believe it or not. No, it's sounding like doom and gloom. And we have to consider that, by the way, as a reality, as a possible reality for us. And now we start saying, well, how do we anticipate this level of threat to our lives and our capacity to do something on our own about it? Which means, how do you, where you get the money to do these things you have to do to get out of a really bad bind? So we're going to talk today about developing a sense of pride about being a penny pincher. Yes, yes, we, one way or the other, we're going to have to get to this place. We're going to have to develop a sense of the value of money, the value of assets, that kind of thing, so that we can take care of ourselves. We may not be able to do it completely without help, but we should be prepared at any time to at least start the process on our own. And how we do that is we stop spending money crazily and we set it aside for when we might need it. Because the way things are going, we're going to need it, I tell you. Do you know, it is an amazing thing when you think about it, that housing, transportation, food, clothing, these are the main things that eat up our resources. They eat up about 65% of whatever money we have. And for some of us who live a little kind of, you know, in the moment, it could be more. Which means that if you're lucky enough to have a job or an income, be prepared to answer for yourself how much of the remaining 35% are you going to hold on to and stash it somewhere so that in the event of a major problem, a major catastrophe, you know, you're not totally bereft of self-help. So that's where we're going. So we have to convert ourselves, most of us, I'm among them, we have to convert ourselves into proud penny pinchers. And we have to see ways in which we can, with great panache and ingenuity, save as much money as we can, because when we really analyze it, we're spending money crazily and recklessly. We're frittering away money that we made or earned in one way or the other. And look at where things are going. Charles Ortel was here several months ago talking about this. There is going to be, there's no doubt about it, there is going to be a downturn, a serious downturn in the economy, which means we have to face the possibility that we will be poor with about 400 O's between the P and the R. Poor. So let's talk about that today. What do you think, in the way you're living now, the lifestyle that you have, what do you think you can do on a regular basis, even on a daily basis? What ingenious things can you do to save money, to stash some cash? Now, that doesn't mean that you become so obsessed with it that you become miserable to be around. No, you should still be happy and hopeful about life, but sensible. Sensible. And this is where sensible begins, all right? You have to look at these things as ways in which you can fix your own problem or begin to. I'm not lecturing. Because life puts us in situations where we have to do all kinds of things, or we, you know, to make up for the crazy things that we have done with our resources. All right, all is forgiven, you know, and we move on. But let's inculcate a sense of responsibility about this business of money, saving as much of it as possible, kind of tweaking your life, how you live, so that you all of your expenses, or most all of your expenses, are manageable. And still, you have a little bit that you can stash. We all have situations in our lives. If you have never had this happen to you, well, you are certainly unique. But we all have situations in our lives where you're really skating on thin ice. And it becomes even thinner, and things get even more dicey if for yourself you can't assure yourself survival. People will help. But that's not to be a way of life. It's important for us, each of us, to have some kind of a strategy or plan for how we will live each day within our means. Now, for those who like the idea of just blowing the money every day, this is not the program for you. But we're talking sensibly, sensibly here. I'll give you an example. Because of the economy, many parents are seeing their children coming back home, and they're living at home, which is a great solution in and of itself. It's a good solution. But if your adult children are not contributing to the household, then it becomes an unworkable solution. They have to find a job because they have to eat. And they can't put all of the burden on the parents. Still, that time is over. And many parents are reluctant to look cross-eyed, at the kids. We love you. We had you. You're a joy to be with. But here's how you become an adult. It takes money to pay the light bill. It takes money to get your clothes to the cleaners. It takes money to put food on the table. You're not going to revert back to the old days when you couldn't take care of yourself. You're an adult now. And we are a cooperative. So your responsibility would be X number of dollars, let's say $40 or $50 or $100, whatever it is, but you put a number before them. I need to have from you every month X number of dollars. And we pool our resources and we live well as a collective. But there's no such thing. I mean, you're a grown person, you're 30 years old or older. Those days of nurturing, we're no longer in the breastfeeding business. You have to pitch in. And this is not iffy, this is absolute. You see? So that's one tweak parents can make. If you have children who are having a hard time at school, books are expensive. You understand all of this, but you have to meet an obligation. You see? So the phones are open at 888-874-4888. And what we're hoping to share with each other in the spirit of that, not blaming and not assigning any kind of guilt or making any kind of judgment. But we're saying, look, in any given week, I know I could put $25 in a jar and hide that jar someplace near the washing machine and nobody would know. All right? So, what are the ingenious ways that we can assure ourselves a nice little nest egg that would help us, face the difficulties that we have, the financial difficulties that we have or anticipate having, and we can figure out how not to go crazy? Because we're starting the process of doing something that we can manage. Everybody in the household has to be aware of the fact that manna does not fall from heaven. It's earned and you got to save it. Okay, 888-874-4888. I'll forego the break music, and I see many people wanting to get in. Hashid from Westchester. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, you trees?
I'm okay. How about you?
Well, you just hit right on the nose. Okay. When you said po, that's what we say, po.
Po.
Po. See. And this started a long time ago. I mean, not a long time ago, but in the 80s, things was falling apart. And, some of these children had jobs, they had trades, but now they was back at mom and pop's house, and they was doing work on mom and pop's house. That's in the 80s. Mom and pop was keeping them going.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that in Upper West or Westchester here, it became a thing, and I didn't know what it was because I was young. And somebody came, they was talking, and they said, "Well, you know, your property value." So I didn't understand them, but what they were saying that we didn't want a certain group of people there because our property values wouldn't be there, even though we lived in a so-called diverse community. So yeah, you're hitting it right on the nose. Now we can't even get part-time jobs or anything because there's so many people here. And those people are undercutting the people who have trades. So it's lucky there's not a war going on. So that has cut into the other people's situation, and I don't know how they're going to save any money. Out here. I mean, that's not even trying to live big.
But you know, I don't know many families that have scheduled a meeting to talk about this within the family. The realities that the family as a unit will now face and ways in which you can start doing something about it, hedging your bets against, you know, disaster, but it is an adult discussion that needs to be had. But many parents are unwilling to bring these kinds of things up. They think that they are, you know, they don't want to discourage their children, but, you know, they're not children anymore. So, you got to have a meeting and lay out the realities of the household, what the expenses are and so forth. And even, I mean, you're not going to just shift the 100% of the burden on anybody, but what you're trying to do is give a sense of the responsibility each person has to the welfare of the whole. You know, they're part of a collective. The family is a collective. I even would say, as I do, the family is a system. And it's a system of survival, too. But everybody's got to pull the rope. Have you had a situation like that in your family? And have you had the sit-down, come-to-Jesus meeting?
Yeah, well, we've always had, I'm a so-called African American. I'm a misplaced Aborigine, and so that there is no families hardly anymore. In the African American community, there's hardly any real families. A guy called me up last week. He was worrying about his son. He thought that he would have to come up our way, because he's down south somewhere, to bury his son, because somebody put some nonsense on his phone that his son was dead. But his son had an accident. But I'm just saying, there is no families. Now, we're looking at total destruction when you walk down the street of people. There's only a few people that really are going to make it. The other part is total destruction there, because they don't know anything about themselves. They don't know anything about themselves. They hardly know anything about their history. If you bring up the movement to somebody, I brought this guy, he's about 50-something years old. He didn't know anything about it. So this is, we are being destroyed. Drugs, infidelity, all that stuff. That's all is taking us right down to the to a dirt level. So that's why when you're talking about poor, we is poor. We're poor. We're a whole lot of and you know we don't have. We don't have them old people around who could say, I still say this thing with this older guy used to say. He said, son, it's hard but it's fair. I still don't know what that means, but I always use it.
But don't you think, Hashid, that it's worth it to try? That it's not a bad idea to give it a shot?
No.
Because there's so much to be gained by making an effort that for everybody to reconnect and for everybody to have a role in each other's survival. That's what family is.
Yeah, you're right. But there's all kinds of things. There's so many things with family, where you come from, this, that, and so, you just stay with those people who really are talking some sense.
Okay. That's fair.
The majority, I mean, I know guys, good families, they had some horrific happen. Somebody murdering somebody, all that, you couldn't even figure it out. How did this happen? It's not just having a good job. It's something some of the people that you talk about and stuff like that, this is what we have to do. And I get off the phone. When I was, we had a group up here called Concerned Parents. And so we got the people to come down, was going to come down from Albany to change some of the curriculum. These are people who live right around the corner from me. You know what they said? They don't speak for us.
Wow.
What do you want?
Maybe they have the luxury of financial safety and economic safety, but I'm talking to those people who realize that the situation as it is untenable, and we have to change it. We have to work in some way, even if you get, an inch, you move an inch forward. That's success. But we can't continue to just ignore how much we have to do, even to achieve the basics. But we have to give it a try. I thank you for calling and getting us started today, Hashid. Great to hear from you. Michelle from California, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice.
Hey, what's up?
Okay. Do we stay on topic of the question you just asked, or I can make another comment?
Go ahead.
Okay.
We're talking about the situation of paying attention, finding ways, ingenious ways in which we can, every single day, put some money in a jar.
Well, about putting the money in the jar, like if there is going to be like a huge disaster collapse with the economical system, if we put the money in the jar and the money gets devaluated, I'm not saying not to save, but I'm thinking at the end of the world, the money may not even be worth anything, first of all.
Look at where you are now. You're thinking, instead of thinking, hey, let me try that and see if it works. Let me try it for a month. You already are forecasting it's not going to work.
No, I'm not saying it's not going to work. I'm just thinking about everything right now. It's like there's a washing machine going on in my brain, thinking about so many things, even buying a house. I don't know if I should buy a house or where to buy a house. I don't even know where to go in the world right now. because there is disaster everywhere, and I feel very insecure in the world.
This idea is to give you a little bit of security. I'll tell you an experience I had recently. I needed to just pick up a few things from the grocery store, and then it dawned on me I don't have any cash at the house. But I do have my little jar that I put coins and stuff in. I said, oh, this might be a good time to just cash all of this in. You know how much money was in that jar? $75.36.
Wow.
$75.36. Now, I never thought about, once I just put the money in, and I never thought about how much money was in there. It was just a way for me to keep order in my life so I don't have all this change carrying around with me. So I put it in a jar, more than $75. And it taught me a lesson. Uh-huh. Don't underestimate the putting a few coins in a jar as you go. At some point, when you need it, even if you don't realize that you need it, I wanted to get some small items, but I got $75.
You know what I did, Eugene? You asked the question, what should we do? I already stopped. I don't buy any clothes. I made a pledge to recycle all my clothes for the next 10 years. Everything I have, I'm going to just use them.
Great.
Shoes and whatever.
That's excellent.
And I don't believe in superficial things. I would rather work on myself, on my physical, health and physical look, instead of buying stuff and put on me. That is really superficial, and you can look good inside and outside without buying anything. Just a T-shirt for $1 at the 99-cent store. I mean, I can do. I would be happy with that and save my money.
But you feel better, even if the reward is that you feel better about yourself and that you are actively engaged in changing certain habits that you have that could cost you a lot of money, you're actually doing it. And that is great.
I'm buying seeds and I'm making my own microgreens. Gary, he said I could even open a business of microgreens, and this is highly nutritional, better than the vegetable I would buy at the supermarket. And I make my own vegetable at home, which you don't need a backyard, you don't need anything. You just can do it in your kitchen.
Excellent idea.
I give myself the best of nutrition, and I don't party. I have a bicycle. I don't go far, so I use my bicycle. It gives me exercise, and I save on gas and insurance. I change my life in so many ways. I'm more happy than before while I'm saving money.
Exactly. That is a fantastic story. But when we started talking, I don't think that you made that connection. I think you just made the connection that you're actually saving money by the things that you're doing. You attribute it to having a better life, being more healthy and so forth. But what I'm hoping that you see is that you are saving money, and the benefits far outweigh the cost of other things that you might be tempted to do. Thanks a lot for calling. Good to hear from you. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Henry.
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Everything's going okay. We're hanging in there.
Good. That's good enough. I'll take it. You're hanging in there. That's a great report. So what do you think you can do on a daily basis to, well, you to know, situate it's yourself a little bit more advantageously?
Well, you know what's so funny, Utrice? This morning on Facebook, Dr. Boyce Watkins posted a quote from Warren Buffett that said, "Do not save what is left after spending, but spend what is left after saving." And so when you brought up this topic, I was like, wow, I just saw that quote this morning. So, and it was so prevalent, you know, of this topic. So I had to call in and tell you that. But, you know, it's also interesting that, you know, I used to have this mentality about, you know, well, I only have about, you know, I only have about $10 left. So, you know, why should I save that? I'll just go ahead and spend it. But what I started realizing not too long ago was those little $10, $20 that I put up, it adds up. I mean, it adds up big time. Now, you were talking about the coin thing with your coin jar. But in my car, you know, I don't smoke. So what I do is I put like coins in the ashtray of my car. And I found out one day that I had almost $20 of coins in my car. Because, you know, the thing is, like I said, I don't smoke. So it's like I just use it as a coin thing. So just in case I need like money for the toll or I'm short a couple of, you know, cents at the store, I can run out to my car and get some coins. But yeah, you know, but another important thing about saving and being economical is not just money, but also in taking inventory of talent. Like, for instance, my uncle is a, you know, my uncle and my cousins, they're great mechanics on cars. So, and you know, like me, I have a background in computers. So it's like when they ask me to fix, you know, or look at their computers, you know, I look at their computers and I don't charge them anything. But then when I need something for my car, I bring it to them and they don't charge me anything. So we need to get that connection of taking inventory within our families, within our communities, about who does what, so I don't have to take my car to CarX and they don't have to take their computers to Best Buy and pay all this exorbitant amount of money.
That's great. How are you saving right now?
Well, you know, like I said, I whatever I have, whether it be $5, whether it be $10, I kind of put it away, and you know, just, you know, kind of put it away for a rainy day. And I know it's not much, but over time it adds up. But also too, like I said, I'm trying to find as many skills, people within my community, within my family, where I can say, hey, I can use you guys, and then I can let them know what my skills are and say, hey, and I think it's called the old barter system, where we can exchange. Yeah, you know, just...
I'm looking, Henry, for a kind of consciousness within your household.
Okay.
You have children at home?
Yes.
Okay. And you're married. Now, what you have a system then, your family system. How are you bringing the family system along in understanding concepts like working as a team, saving as a team to achieve a particular objective, developing a sense of consciousness about the value of money?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess what I would present is, if there's something major that needs to be done within the family, that, you know, they say we might take a financial hit or something like that, we bring it to the table, and we kind of bring it to the table where we can reach out to other resources to see where we can take the least financial hit
in regards to, you know, spending something that's very necessary. We also talk about, is it necessary to take this route? Because the thing is that we have to control our spending. There's certain things that we can't control in regards to bills and everything like electricity and stuff like that. But if there's something that needs to be done, say like household repairs, you know, it's something that, you know, we talk about a lot in regards to maintaining, you know, the house and what necessarily needs to be done and, you know, what can wait. But at the same time, when it's done, make sure that it's done where we won't have to worry about it for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're on your way. And this is a good kind of encouraging call because people are not doing this. And they're missing out on so many ways that they can help themselves financially. I just applaud you for approaching it this way and seeing your family as a system, an economic system. And if everybody pitches in, it's not that you're being hard or being, you know, just annoying to other members of the family. But the idea is that you're encouraging people to understand how things happen, how the lights get paid, you know, how the gas gets in the car, that kind of thing. Everybody is on a budget, and not to the point that you're making people suffer and penalizing them and life has no meaning or joy whatsoever, but to develop the discipline of respecting the value of their money. So that's great. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice. Hope all is well. And good afternoon to the PRN family. Now,
thank you.
Yatrice, if you had, if my son was listening, he would say, okay, you need to talk to my mom, because he would call me a penny pincher, but I would characterize myself as being very frugal. So when he was a youngster, he's now, of course, an adult and married with children of his own, but one of the biggest arguments that we always had, because he was going to a Catholic school that didn't have uniforms, and so I would always go to the Gap, and I would always shop on the $9.99 sale rack. And, of course, he was the butt of jokes because I was always a season behind. And his friends knew that because they had the current season clothes. And they recognized that his clothes were always a season behind because it was the $9.99 sale rack. So the point I'm trying to make is one has to have a sense of frugal, not to the point where you're denying yourself, you know, some of the nice things in life in terms of entertainment and travel, but you really do have to think about how you develop a budget and how you live within that budget. And that's something I have always done and actually helped people in my family develop budgets that they live within. And so, for example, I own a 1985 Honda Accord. Why are you laughing?
Because it brought to mind a friend of mine. A husband refuses to buy a new car.
I refuse to buy a new car.
And patches it up with twine and all this.
Well, no, I don't have to mash it up with twine. But the car runs. It gets me from point A to point B. It's in pretty good shape. Why do I need a new car?
Exactly.
And that's something that I had to share with my friends who were constantly in debt, because they were buying a new car every 3 to 4 years. And I said to them, why are you always making certain that the car dealer gets rich while you continue to have debt? And so that I am now, you know, on a fixed income, and I continue to live within a budget. And I think when people begin to think like that, my son, our food budget was always based on what was on sale for the week. So now my daughter-in-law tells me she can't send my son to the store because if he sees an item on sale, he brings back tons of the item.
Mm-hmm.
But he understands the value of a dollar, and what you spend your money on and living within a budget. So, for example, when they were newlyweds, and I guess my grandson was an infant at the time, they wanted to purchase a house. So we talked as a family, and they lived with me, but the two of them worked so that they could pool their resources to put the down payment on the house. I knew that they were working towards a goal, so I wouldn't ask them to contribute because I knew they were working towards a goal. And they did, and they achieved it, and they got it. But the point is, you have to develop a mindset that money has value, and that it's there to do that which you need to have done. And once you do that, the reserve will be there when the economy tanks.
Mm-hmm. As it will.
As it will.
And that's a great story. Just so you know, that my friend with the twine car, they lived in a community, and the community informed him that if he doesn't get rid of the car, they will.
Well,
but he loved that car. So,
well, funny enough,
right? The idea is, but you have to have that consciousness.
Yes, you do. You do.
I mean, when I was working, for example, I had a really bad habit. I would just put my check on a table, and it would sit there for a month or two or three sometimes, and I go, oh my gosh, I didn't deposit these checks. And when I did deposit them, it was a nice little windfall.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said to myself, well, all right, this is an interesting system. I'm skating on thin ice by taking the chance that the checks would still be good for the length of time they're sitting on the table. But you always have to have some kind of reassurance. What's important to me is that you could take care of yourself. You know, you can take care of yourself. And even if you fall on hard times, you're able still to draw on that philosophy. You still have something going that you can take care of yourself. And that's a very, very important thing.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Great call.
Thank you.
Ethan from Brooklyn, you're on the air. We lost Ethan. Okay. Then Pat from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi, it's not Pat. It's Nina. How are you, Yutrice?
Oh, it's who?
Nina.
Mina. Hello.
Nina. Oh, I'm good. Otherwise.
You have a little bit of time. You have about 3 minutes.
And it's good because I want to tell everybody about the 10% Club. The 10% Club is just putting 10% away of everything that you have as income. You know, if somebody gives you a tip, if, 10%. And you just put that away. Don't think about it. Don't even refer to it. Just put it in a jar, if you will, or an envelope. And you'd be surprised. A friend of mine told me about it because she said I would never be rich. And I wanted to prove to her, yeah, I could be. Yes, I could. But I haven't made it yet. But I could be. And after a point in time with putting like 10% of my salary, 10% of whatever gifts I got or what have you, I looked in that envelope and there was over $3,000 in there, you know?
All
so
right.
Putting 10% away helps very much so.
Do you envision this to be a permanent way that you're going to operate?
Well, actually I'm going to go back to it because, you know, once I found that I had such a big store, like I kind of forgot about it, and I actually still have a lot of that money left. But I think it's something that I'll return to, you know, from my limited income. You know, I think if I put 10% away, I'll be doing very well in time.
Is anybody in your family emulating your 10% idea?
No, I'm kind of like the only one left now. So I'm going to have to keep it to myself. but I'm sharing. Oh. I'm sharing right now.
Okay. Well, the idea is that you have moved on this purpose. You've moved on it and made it happen. And you've seen for yourself how valuable it is to have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
When things get a little rough, and you probably long forgot that you had these reserves in there. But isn't it great when it happens that way, that when you're in a bind, you get a nice windfall?
Yeah, and there's also a little thing that I have. It says all the change that I need, and it's like a coin counter for dimes, nickels, quarters, and pennies. Mm. And when you fill it up, it is almost $20. And, just putting the spare change from every day in it, that helps out too.
Mm. Great. Thanks for calling and contributing today. I really appreciate it. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Coming up next, Ring of Fire Radio. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID, and stories, plural, at gmail.com. I really like the idea of us keeping ourselves centered. What is really important in our lives. So thank you all for calling, and we'll see each other tomorrow. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.